everybody, it's Shigay Country West, and I'm here with Tommy.
Hey guys.
And the last time we did a podcast, we talked a lot. Like, a lot.
Yeah.
And so, because of that, I had to split up the episodes. So, you are about to listen to the second part of the previous episode, where we continue to talk about philosophy, and it's like question 3 or 4.
Yeah, and fair warning, it's at like 1 in the morning, so things might be a little less intelligible, but bear with us.
Right. So without further ado,
enjoy, guys.
Hey. Number 3. Why don't we, as a species, take more advantage of the fact that we have almost infinite knowledge available to us?
Ignorance is bliss.
So is it fear?
Yeah. Fear of not being in control of your environment.
Okay.
Fear of not being in control of your own destiny. Fear, like,
but this is, we have an almost infinite knowledge base
from the internet, yeah,
of things that I don't know. Physics, I don't know, like the stuff that, you know, like rocket stuff, but it's out there, it's truth, we know it, science has proved it. But are we lazy?
Yeah.
I mean, I have no reason to know nuclear physics.
And I guess there's that realization that comes with maturity where you're like, it's totally okay to not care about something. As long as that something is...
Is it because we didn't know it before?
I mean, no. I think, like, imagine someone approaches you with an envelope. And what is inside? They tell you what is inside this envelope will change your life forever. You will never be the same. Everything that you know about your life is a lie. And if you open that envelope, you will know the truth. Would you open the envelope and sacrifice everything that you know now for the truth?
You know, that's like putting someone into a white room. And there's a red button in the middle that says, do not push.
Mm-hmm.
How long will it take you to crack before you actually push that
button?
Or
let me refine it a little bit. If you're like, you can look in this envelope. If you say, I don't want to see it, I'll take it away and you'll never see it again. And there's no way you'll ever learn the truth.
You will feel regret the rest of your life.
Probably, yeah. Because it ends up being that argument between which is more important, truth or ideals. Is the truth of a situation more important than the way things, it's the way things are versus the way things should be or could be? Like, you have a pretty happy life. Like, you have people who know your life who love you. You have consistency. You have contentedness. If something were to come around and just absolutely rock your world, odds are an average person would be like, nah, I'm going to pass. They're going to say, I'll just continue to live this pseudo lie for the rest of my life because I have that contentedness. I think that's going back to the original point. Even if you have that information at your fingertips, a lot of people are scared because it might change the entire foundation of the way they live their lives. Like, say you're religious, and there's a lot of evidence to suggest that your religion is false, or that the claims that it has made do not stand up to scrutiny. A lot of people tend to buckle down. I forget exactly what book it was, but there was a group of scientists in California in the mid-70s studying cults. That began to sprung up in the mid-60s, early 70s. And there was one doomsday cult in particular that they were talking about. that they had the prophesized end of the world was like October 3rd, 1979.
Mm-hmm.
The day came and went. And people, instead of changing their minds, most of the cult members believed, they tried to justify it, that the world had ended and this was a new, refreshed world, or that they were all dead and the rest of it was just dreaming that God was giving them to apologize for taking away the rest of their lives. Maybe this was the flash, the end of your life, like the movie Jacob's Ladder.
I don't think I've ever seen that.
The movie itself is based entirely off its twist, which if you look anywhere online will have spoiled for you, so it's not necessarily like a huge loss. But yeah, so it ends up being kind of sad, like when you reach a point in time where the lives of when you reach a point where your life could be irrevocably changed by one piece of information. And do you want the truth or something beautiful? Like, it's kind of a cliche statement, but, you know, what about you? What are your thoughts?
I think it goes back to the fact that we as humans are just lazy. I mean, we have an almost infinite knowledge available to us. And we just don't. I mean, why do I have a whole shelf now covered in books about Christianity?
Because you enjoy the subject.
I enjoy the subject. I think it has gotten to a point where I need to know what Christianity is, what is our true beliefs, where did we start, what did it take to get us to this point. That is knowledge that I am really, really wanting to absorb, where there are a lot of people who just want to live the rest of their lives calling themselves Christians, but they don't want to put in the time to read about all the history, and they don't want to study it in detail to see if all of this stuff even fits with them.
Exactly.
Just like the philosophy stuff. I really want to get into philosophy, and I want to learn as much as I possibly can of why do I think, you know, a certain way. Like, what, you know, like I want to put the work into it for myself, that I can put that knowledge in my mind. There's plenty of room in my mind. Not saying that my brain is empty, but there, there's plenty of room that I can put knowledge in there.
Yeah.
I'm taking advantage of that opportunity to do that, where there's a ton of people who just could live the rest of their lives not knowing a lot of things. Mm-hmm. It boggles my mind when I hear someone say that there's absolutely no reason to have any more learning after they graduate 12th grade. Like, oh my God. Like, why would you say that? Why would you think that? You never stop learning, you know. But there is actually people that I have talked to where it's literally like, after they finished high school, why do I want to go and learn anything else? I don't know. Maybe make yourself better, you know, work on yourself.
I think it comes back to the whole lizard brain thing, where people are like, people want security.
Mm-hmm.
Because it makes lizard brain happy and tells them, oh, you're not. Like, if you live in this comfortable bubble, you're not going to die.
Mm.
You feel safe. You feel in control. And with those ideas, it's like that new idea is almost like an invader or a predator. It's scary, it's unknown, and lizard brain's like, we don't want it. Because if you lose that sense of security or safety, it's like, well, shit, what do I do now?
Mm.
Which, it's easy to fall in that trap. And sometimes even when I'm doing my research or just sitting around having a think on the toilet, it's like...
where we do most of our thinking.
Well, I do my best thinking.
Exactly.
Usually I forget what it is by the end. Because like too much of me has left. My thought right out my bottle.
That's right.
I mean, by Socratic Seminar. but then you reach that point where you're like, I don't really know if I want to go down that rabbit hole, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Because it might just, I think, okay, I've invalidated enough of my own existence for today. I'm going to draw the line there.
Right.
And sometimes it's like, oh, you want, like I said, do you want the truth, something beautiful? Do you want to live your life happily, safely, comfortably, and doing good? Or do you want to live a life where you know the truth about everything? And in my opinion, it's like David Hume said, logic and reason should for only be the slaves of the passions. Essentially, that you should seek truth for the things you care about. Your feelings matter more than the truth of the existence, according to Hume. And which I found really liberating, because if I cared about something, like I love insects, I will Google facts and read books about insects all day. Do I really want to know how close a neutron star is going to be to incinerate all of us in the next 20 years? No, I don't. I don't care. And I don't, there are parts of me that all it would do would, it would detract from me living a happy, healthy, and helpful life. It would drive me into a bizarre spiral of indulgent nihilism, where like, if you knew that one fact, that would drive you insane, you know?
Things drive me insane every day when I can't remember them, like facts.
Like, when tomorrow it's stuck in your head, what is the scientific name for the silkworm moth? Bombole Mori. You're welcome.
I think that question kind of rolls into the fourth question.
Mm-hmm.
Does knowledge have intrinsic value, or does it need to have a practical use to have value?
Okay, I'm going to get nerdy for a second. So there is a DC Comics arc. It's the second part of the Injustice storyline.
Okay, if you ever tell me again to not bring up Days of Our Lives, I'm going to throw something at you. Continue.
And the main antagonist of the second part is an alien called Brainiac,
mm-hmm.
who is a... Injustice is a separate universe, a separate continuity than the original storyline, and he's a Superman villain, mm-hmm. predominantly. And he goes around the universe in his ship, collecting cities and collecting superior organisms and discarding the rest.
Mm.
And the reason what he gives for this is that humans value like money and precious metals and oil and things like that. He values knowledge, and he finds that knowledge is more valuable when it's rare.
Mm.
And I've actually been thinking about that for a while after I read that arc. It's very interesting to me how like knowledge can have an intrinsic value. Of course it can. Like, am I ever going to do anything involving the friggin' silkworm moth? Probably not. But knowing that fact and knowing that that thing exists and that it's cute makes me happy.
So is it in... So I guess, let's give a definition to intrinsic.
Intrinsic is something that it has value in itself. Like, just the fact that it exists gives it value.
I think all knowledge is intrinsic.
Intrinsically valuable?
Yeah.
But then again, I will say this. Any piece of knowledge, even if it's practical nature, is just to make you happy.
I mean, is knowledge just to make us happy? I mean, are we more happy with the more knowledge that we have?
On certain subjects.
Right. But I mean, like, just to know some knowledge about rocket science is not going to make me like go and click my heels together in the air.
I mean, I'd love to see you do that. I'd love to see you leave the ground.
I mean, you know what I mean, though? It's not going to make me so happy because I know what made the rocket ship go up into the sky. I mean, that's mm-hmm. not knowing what caused Eusebius to write his book and, you know, the early history of the church. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that does make me happy.
Exactly. That's why the question, does all knowledge have intrinsic value or is it all practical? In my opinion, it's contextual. Having knowledge about rockets or rocket science could make someone else really happy, even if you don't care. Like I said, logic and reason should be the slave of the passions. It should go along and be, you should be able to use and learn your facts in order to make yourself happy. And it goes back to the first question. To make the world a better place in any capacity.
Mm.
Like even if it should just bring myself up to make myself happier or to just make casual conversation about something that I find someone else has a mutual interest in. Like if you found someone at a dinner party and you want to talk about Days of Our Lives with them, that would bring you both up. That would make you both happier, therefore giving that information a practical value.
Mm.
So in my opinion, all knowledge has practical value, even if it's not being used to map the stars or save lives. It all has practical value contextually. Give it's person to person.
Mm. So on that, would we say that a goal of humanity should be to get as much knowledge as possible?
As a collective, yeah, but as an individual, no.
So let's go to question number 5. I think we're getting more into like universal questions.
Bland.
What do you think existed before the universe was created? Well, I think we've had this conversation before.
There's a presupposition there. That implies the universe has a beginning.
Well, I think that, so the book that I didn't finish, that I couldn't finish.
Which one?
The God Confusion.
Mm-hmm.
So when you say the word God, what's the one quality of that word that makes God, God?
The power of creation?
Mm-mm.
What?
The idea of God is that you cannot humanly imagine anything greater than this being, which is God. If you can think of anything greater, as if this or if God was created from something, he no longer becomes God. It's the one that you thought was higher than him that becomes God.
God doesn't sound like a real word anymore. You said it so many times.
But you get what I'm saying.
Yeah.
That's what, you know, we say God or Yahweh or Allah or whatever name you want to put on this being, this concept. If you want to say the only thing that existed before the universe was created, then that's what many of us believe was there before. If you want to, and a lot of people in the religious community has understood that science is not evil. Science can be good. That's why I love being Episcopal, because we are able to think. We can accept science for what it is. Episcopals, okay, go ask the Pope how much science that he thinks that people need to accept.
Sure, Jan.
that's the one thing that I just really love about being Episcopal is that we are allowed and we are given brains and we need to use them. Do you bring into the concept that maybe there was this object, if you want to look at the Bang, and that the Bang created the universe, which is constantly expanding? That was a question that I asked in New Orleans. If the universe has, if the universe is finite, what do you think is on the other side?
Nothingness.
Do you think it's a wall?
No.
That if we got too finite, that we actually could not go past it? The reason I say this is if we live in a universe, when we think of universe, now, we're not thinking Milky Way. Now, we have seen images of what the outside of the Milky Way is supposed to look like. The outside of our solar system, maybe not the outside of the Milky Way. Which one of the satellites took a picture of the outside, like after Pluto? Like what was?
Couldn't tell you.
Thank you.
Sorry, I like robots that are on land, not robots in space.
So there's
also the name of my band, Robots in Space.
Right. That was before y'all never got a gig.
My mom still thinks we're great.
But if there is this massive like cloud structure that is around the solar system, and then you have the Milky Way that we're just a little part of, and then the Milky Way galaxy is just next door to Andromeda or whatever, and then you have these thousands of galaxies, and when you get to the very end of what our current universe is, even if we could reach that point, could we exist past that point?
No.
Because can we exist where there's not a universe?
That's why.
Or is there nothingness?
Nothingness. An emptiness, a void of existence.
Just dark matter?
No, nothing.
Okay.
It's something that we cannot comprehend.
Exactly. So before the universe was created, wouldn't everything have been whatever is on the end, past the end of the universe?
Well, we have to think. Like, if we follow the laws of thermodynamics, something can never come from nothing.
Right.
So spontaneous generation of energy. So there had to have always been something.
Right, because energy doesn't die or whatever. Energy is always there.
Energy cannot be created nor destroyed. It can only be converted. Right. Which is why this is my big brain hot take for the evening.
Ding, ding, ding,
I genuinely believe that time is cyclical. I would think it's more less like a circle and more of an infinity.
An infinity?
An infinity like symbol with multiple layered on top of each other. I think that simultaneously there are countless realities all happening on top of each other, layered, like...
Well, how many dimensions are we supposed to have? Like 10?
Probably. I don't know.
I think we're up to 10.
I'm not a scientist. But it's like...
Stop fucking You're asking. A thinker.
Yeah. Like I said, I poop a lot, so I think a lot. So it's, I think,
Pupula.
Yeah, I think there are just lots of layered realities that are either very similar or wildly different from each other, all happening simultaneously over the same Mobius strip of time.
Okay.
And so they're constantly affecting each other. They're bleeding into each other sometimes, which is my explanation for some paranormal phenomenon. Mm-hmm. Like sometimes the fabric of realities as something that's not being maintained constantly, they bleed into each other. So like a chair moving in a light flashing, like those orbs people take pictures of. I genuinely believe it's a weakness in the fabric of our reality bleeding into another one. And so I think the universe has no beginning and has no end because it will exist forever. You could even use the term forever because that implies a time context. In my personal opinion, time is unending.
Mm-hmm.
Constantly layered
upon it. Time is a human construct.
I mean, we can view time as we age and get older, but I think from a cosmic macro perspective, because of our layered realities constantly affecting each other,
mm-hmm.
and if performing in a cyclical pattern, even that tiny jolt of energy from another reality kickstarts another one. So like me waving my hand over here on my right side could bleed into another existence and jumpstart a universe. I know, I sound like a complete fucking crackpot. Hear me out. It's just my thought.
Get out.
I think it's just that time exists on this infinity symbol where, and there's hundreds of them, countless of them, layered on top of each other, flowing in and out of each other, exchanging energy. There's no end, there's no limit. Energy is constantly being passed between them. But because of the nature of time existing outside of our perception and being constant, the energy is never created nor destroyed because it has always been and always will be. I'm going to listen back to this in a few days and I think I'm fucking crazy. But this is me. That's what I've thought. I've genuinely thought about this. And it feels like oh, we could just use Occam's razor it and say, oh, it's God. Well, which one, based on any level of statistical or physical analysis, would stand up to better scrutiny? That time is all existing, or that there is something that exists outside of time?
What if the universe collapsed back on itself? This is not another question. This is just my thought process.
Like, what if it started, the universe, instead of expanding, it started going inward?
Right. What if it got to the point of where it started? You think that the universe didn't just create, that it's just always been there.
In some way, shape, or form. Maybe not our universe.
But what if it did start with a Big Bang? What if the universe did one of those cinematic things where everything rewinds and people walk backwards? And what if that just happened really quick? And it went back to one dot. What would it be? Would it just? Is it just a slit in the universe, and these stars just spewed out of this slit in nothingness, or was it just? What was there? Like, what was it? An atom? I mean,
I think a single atom. Which is made of matter.
Mm-hmm.
They're the basics of existence.
Matter.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Slipped into nothingness from another dimension, another reality. Slipped in because it's the smallest possible thing that exists in the universe. Slipped into a fabric and reality. But because there was now something in the nothingness, because of the law of entropy, the nothingness must expand. It must expand to fill a space. But because there is nothingness, it's all empty space. So the atom explodes and basically creates the known universe, or at least what it was, and expands and duplicates itself and just sends all of this amazing amount of energy into what we now think of our universe, introducing energy into an energyless state, meaning now the systems of energy that exist in that single atom jumpstart all of the energy that exists in our universe.
Wow.
Because think about nuclear fission, dissecting the nucleus of a single atom yields an obscene amount of power and amount of energy, something that human beings can't even comprehend or control.
Mm-hmm.
So if that occurs, and if we think that, but that that doesn't explain how we have natural minerals and resources in our planet, on our planet.
Well, it's been proven that, I mean, we're not, Earth is not the end-all be-all of existence.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like we have these properties or these minerals on planet Earth that are not on all these other planets.
But what
too.
If there is an alpha element? An alpha element.
Would it be hydrogen?
That it's the father of all other elements.
I mean, would you not think the hydrogen would be that? Because if you don't have hydrogen, you pretty much don't have a lot of other things.
That may be true, or maybe it's the ancestor itself of...
I mean, wouldn't that... That's kind of like why it's one.
And you have... It's the single atom slip through, fissure, and then it releases all of this energy, perhaps reacting on itself as a hydrogen, a split hydrogen atom, which then creates all of the other elements that naturally exist in the universe.
Deep, man.
Yeah, you need to fucking really smoke a bowl deep after this one. Shit.
Maybe that should have been the deep question. All right.
We should just get really fucking high and deep sometime.
God, now this is just question six. So,
how many questions are there? 10?
There's a few. So, number six, is math something that humans created or something we discovered? Is looking at reality mathematically an accurate representation of how things work?
To your first question, I say it's something we discovered.
Well, I think it... So... That's like the.
I love when you do that. You're like, I think I feel.
that's like saying the difference between inventing something and discovering something. Man did not invent fire. We discovered it.
Fire.
Man invented the wheel to help him. Yeah. But that's also thinking. That's also giving man the credit for something that could have already just been there in nature, and we just and man yeah, just was like, oh, imagine, maybe I could put this on some axles and help me do work.
Yeah, imagine watching a round stone roll down a hill.
Right, circles or spheres have been naturally in existence. Just so that our listeners are hearing this, you know, it is 11:53 at night.
And my brain is literally splattered all over the ground after that last question.
But we have...
Should we take a break? I don't know if we can handle anything
We
more.
Have our deepest conversations in the middle of the night.
That's very true.
Yeah.
I'm also hungry.
But yeah, I mean, when you look up into the sky... At least for a couple of nights every month, what do you see? You see something that is round.
The moon?
Yeah. You see something that is round. For us and for people...
If you have any flat earther listeners, leave.
Well, think about this. Leave. Think about this.
Delete yourselves.
Think about this. When we look up at the moon, we see the same thing... All the time, correct?
The same object, yeah.
Do we not see the Sea of Tranquility all the time?
Mm-hmm.
We do.
Yeah.
So think of human number one, or whatever you want to call him.
We'll call him Adam.
Right. So whatever you want to call him, when he looks up at the sky and he sees this round object... He probably did not think that this round object ever turned because he always saw the same thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Who's like so? It there was always a round object that he could see.
The moon itself turns on its axis, but it moves in such a way that we always see the same side if we can see the moon.
Right. That's why the dark side of the moon is always a thing for us.
Yeah, we don't know what the dark side of the moon is.
So,
also implying that the moon is flat.
Well, he might have thought that it was.
Yeah, because there's like a beautiful mosaic in the sky.
So he never thought of, oh, well, you know, here's this ball up in the sky. Hell, he could have probably thought the same thing about the sun.
It's a flat disc.
Right, or it's just really bright.
Or you could figure, like, there were other religions in the past who believed that it was an actual deity or creature that was, like, I know in Egyptian mythology, there was an ancient snake that was defeated by basically their king of the gods, Ra, who its eyes were made into the sun and the moon.
So Pythagoras, okay. So, it always goes back to Pythagoras. So, you've got Pythagoras, and who knows what made him look at angles and triangles and come up with this idea that...
Being wealthy and bored.
I guess so, yeah. So, I mean, he came up with this idea, oh, well, if you take, you know, a side of a triangle and you add it and you square it plus the B side of a triangle and you square it, add them together and it equals the squared C side. He found that out. That always existed.
Before the concept of square.
It was like, it was always there. It just took somebody to take some time and be like, oh, this is true. Okay. So he did he discover it or did he realize?
Discovered.
So it would be
math is basically just us using mostly Arabic numerals to
realize
nature.
To realize something.
Mm-hmm. That already exists.
Right.
And unless you're working in theoretical physics, then you're wasting your life.
Okay. Oh, well, I mean, it's all based in theory.
Exactly. Things that could possibly occur, but likely never will.
I think that's...
Also, I have a cat in my lap now, so I'm a little distracted.
Okay. Don't get too distracted. So, is looking at reality mathematically an accurate representation of how things work?
Depends on what you mean by reality. If you mean reality like everything in the physical universe, then yeah. But if your reality also includes your mind and your emotions, then no.
Well, you can't really... I mean, emotion can't have a numerical value put on it.
Tell that to Freud.
Well, Freud was a fuckwad, too.
Tell that to the psychoanalysts. Tell that to the modernists. Hume was like, don't try to do that. Don't try to quantify everything. And they're all like, fuck Hume. We're going to quantify it anyway. And then the postmodernists came around with, like, in most probably Derrida, what?
The cat's head was like...
I can see your eyes glazing over. And then the postmodernists came around and said, hey, modernists, you guys really shouldn't do that because not only is trying to quantify human emotion and experience a bad idea, it's also essentially impossible to do entirely unbiasedly. Because you're like, oh, they can... A lot of psychoanalysis by the modernists was eventually used to like justify racism or misogyny or justify imperialism. Like, oh, they're just inferior because they didn't excel in certain terminologies that were valued by, say, European culture. So yeah, fuck the modernists.
Okay.
Everyone just needs to hang out with their cool Algerian Jewish uncle, Jacques Derrida. Really, like people always say that Derrida's ideas are incomprehensible. They're really not. Like listening to him speak, it's fantastic. His first book, though, was so tedious to get through.
I think I've heard Derrida speak.
Jacques Derrida.
Yeah,
he passed not too long ago.
Yeah, I think I watched a couple of videos.
I think I've sent you a couple of videos.
Yeah. I'm going to go ahead and break this right here. So that
good we can... call, so we can recover from those high-level ideas. I'm sorry, you wouldn't get that reference.
It makes creating this into a more broadcasting kind of thing easier.
Totally.
So we're going to stop here.
Right.